You're listening to The MemoCast, brought to you by Wreck-It Magazine.
All right, so welcome to The MemoCast, episode 17, Shiny Shoes. And today, with me continuing the trend for Superstar September, is my friend Cisco, right here to my right.
Hello.
And so, Chaboy is still currently on his sabbatical, and last week I took a sabbatical of my own and decided, rather than trying to force an episode out last minute and really just have it not be the greatest, I decided to just take that week off. The scheduled co-host for that week just ended up having a bail. Just stuff, life got in the way. So it happens. But we're back, and lots going on. But first, before we get too in-depth about our bigger topics, we're going to do some news briefs. So the first one is Daredevil cast is set to make their first appearance at New York Comic Con in October.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. The reveal is, hopefully, I mean, Daredevil has like a kind of record for being like terrible in movies.
Well, they've only had one.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that one has kind of set the precedent for, like, you know, with Ben Affleck, like...
You know what's funny is that movie's honestly not that bad. It's, the actors do really well with it. I think part of the problem is more so with the script than anything else, because as far as my complaints go with that movie, Ben Affleck's not one of them.
Oh, Ben Affleck, to me, he was never terrible. What actually made it kind of cheesy, and I think you're right, it probably was because of the script, was, Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
But to me, he, just some of, like, you know, you have, like, a weapon, like, or, I mean, excuse me, a villain like Bullseye. And it's just, like, the way they made him was very, I felt like, watered down. They didn't make him, like, vicious enough. But I still think that with like, the society at large, with the new Daredevil, they can really just kind of go up from where they are.
Yeah, you know. And really, we haven't seen a bunch of Daredevil appearances as far as the entire, media goes outside of the comics. Like, the only other one that really comes to mind is a couple of cameos in Spider-Man the Animated Series.
Yeah.
It was that two-part episode wherein Peter Parker is framed by the Kingpin.
Yeah.
And but that was a great appearance in the voice. I forget who the voice actors played him, but he, in my opinion, whenever I read Daredevil comics, that's the voice that I hear in my head.
Yeah, you know what? That was probably one of my favorite little series of Spider-Man the Animated Series. And with Daredevil, I think that, I mean, I'm not saying that they're like, he's like the red-suited stepchild, but I think that Marvel in general, like, should do more with him. Either, yeah, like, more crossovers or something. And, you know, just give him more of his space, because his story is really awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, right now he has a great book being written by Mark Waid. I was going to call him Matt Waid. Okay. Yeah, so Mark Waid's doing really well with that solo title. And he's been more involved with Avengers books, and even having Avengers come into his own book, like Henry Pym and Iron Man have both come in. He had a crossover a little while ago, a couple months ago actually, with the Hulk.
Oh, wow.
Well, because at the time, Mark Waid was writing both Hulk and Daredevil, so he's like, I'm just going to take both my characters.
Yeah, why not?
And put them in. And then, obviously, with this new show, it's part of, like, the Marvel Netflix series that they're trying to push. And there's going to be other characters that will eventually cross over, similar to how the Avengers work. So you're going to have Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and I believe Jessica Jones. And then they'll eventually, those series will all combine into another series called Defenders.
Wow, that's...
Or the Defenders. So it'll be nice to see that once it all pans out. But as far as, like, all those shows going, Daredevil's the only one that has any major traction and is really far along.
I think that Daredevil, I mean, with Netflix in general, their shows have, a lot of freedom.
Yeah.
And I think that's really good, because with major networks, a lot of them is kind of getting, like, pigeonholed or wanting to please this group or that group.
Yeah.
So with that, I mean, hopefully, you know, especially if they're doing crossovers, I think there's so much potential for the Daredevil.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think,
I mean, especially with, like, Elektra 2 and stuff.
Well, I feel like with Marvel's decision to go the Netflix route, I think that they know if they street-level heroes, they have to be able to get away with a little bit more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was a good decision on their behalf. And hopefully once all these shows launch, they'll be able to kind of compete with DC in the TV realm, because right now they're dominating with the amount of shows they have coming out.
Because
right now they have Gotham, which just premiered yesterday night, which we'll talk about more so in the show later on. Mm-hmm. They have Arrow going on season 3.
Which is great.
Yeah. Flash, season premiere October 17th.
Okay.
Well, series season premiere. Yeah. And then Constantine, I think the week after. Mm-hmm. And then the next topic that we'll talk about is a Teen Titans pilot set for TNT.
I'm so excited about that.
You know what? Part of me is, like, really excited. Oh, okay, so Teen Titans, TNT knows drama.
Yeah.
But at the same... TNT knows drama.
There's a little plug right there.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's, like, apparently, from what I read, it's the pilot's been written by the guy who wrote Batman and Robin.
I'm sorry. So are we going to have, like, an Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, cameo
gonna be,
in
there? There's going to be a lot of puns.
Probably what
it's going to be.
There will be a really cool drinking game in that pilot, I'm
oh,
sure.
Oh, yeah. You'll get hammered just with puns.
Within, like, 20 minutes.
So that should be interesting. And then another pilot that just got greenlit is the Supergirl pilot.
Supergirl has always been one of those... When it comes to Batman and Superman, I've always went towards more Batman. So I'm more like, well, I wish we could see, like, Batwoman or Batgirl.
Yeah.
But Supergirl has always been, well... To me, she's hot. You know, I mean, not to mention other things that her story can open up the Superman universe a little bit more.
Well,
so I think that's a good direction to go in. I just hope that they do it, not like...
The movie?
Yeah, the movie. I mean, you know, like, the movie was just, like, a little bit iffy, and I just kind of hope
a little bit iffy. It was pretty bad.
Well, I mean, like, I've kind of, like, you know, I don't know. I there's, like, parts I liked and there's parts I didn't like.
Yeah.
But as long as it doesn't turn into, like, another Smallville.
Yeah, I'm not really down for a Smallville type thing,
yeah.
But the one I've always appreciated Kara more than I have Clark,
mm-hmm.
And the biggest reason is that whereas Clark is Kryptonian, he's not born, but he arrives here as a baby, so he's kind of from the get go he's very assimilated into our culture, whereas Kara is more of a fish out of water.
Yeah,
so it leads toward, I guess, more comedic situations, but more so it's her trying to really adapt. And it's cool to see that.
Oh, yeah.
So I've always enjoyed that about her. Plus, I feel with... Whereas Clark has these... The best way to look at this is using, like, the different levels of good. Or not levels, but, like, you know... So he's very lawful good. Whereas I feel Kara is more neutral. She's...
Oh, yeah. She can even set up to be things of, like, anti-hero. You know
I wouldn't go anti-hero. Well, maybe right now.
But, I mean, I think it'd be cool to put her in some situations that would maybe be... grazing anti-hero, not exactly it, but like you said, she's more like, she's not like the Boy Scout that Clark is at all.
You know, because I mean, at the end of the day, Clark is supposed to be this ideal person that we want
to
be.
He's supposed to be the symbol of, like, pretty much law and order,
well,
I guess you could say.
Justice.
Yeah, there you go.
And then, but yeah, they're actually doing a lot of cool stuff with her in her own book, because she's a Red Lantern right now.
That's amazing.
She and Guy Gardner are both Red Lanterns.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
so
awesome.
That book is actually probably the best it's ever been, especially because Charles Soule is writing it, and he's exiting the book because he just recently signed a Marvel contract to be exclusively writing for them.
Yeah.
You know, well, because, dude, he was writing for both DC and Marvel, and he was writing, like, 8 books.
That's the dream.
Yeah, no, he was writing...
Best of both worlds.
He was writing Swamp Thing, was writing, what's it called, like I said, Red Lanterns, and he was also writing She-Hulk. And just other books that don't come to mind.
You know, with Supergirl, like, if they did do the Red Lantern thing, one of my hopes would be that maybe if they put it into the series, because I feel like the DC universe has all the multicolored lanterns, and they could fit into so many crossover shows, and they just kind of don't. I mean, like, you know, the Flash being, I believe, like, the Blue Lantern.
He is a Blue Lantern.
You know, and it's
during
just,
always the brightest, darkest night, brightest day. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's something, I mean, even if they would have so much content to even do, like, a Green Lantern show, especially because the movie, a lot of people thought it was just, like, terrible. I thought it was, like...
It was okay,
and that's kind of giving it a lot of credit, but but I just hope that in the Supergirl, if they're doing it in the books, that they kind of maybe explore it.
Well, I feel like that could be something that could be done, but that would have to be years down the line.
Yeah,
you'd have to establish a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That, and I feel like other than Arrow and The Flash, I don't know if any of these other shows are going to have, like, crossover potential.
Yeah, well, I mean, they did really good job in Arrow.
I mean, it's not even that they're saying that it would be hard. It's more so because, like I said, Teen Titans gets greenlit. It's on TNT. Constantine's on NBC. The other two shows are on the CW.
They have to work.
They're on different networks, and you know how, like, you know, these companies are. They just it's all about them.
Yeah.
So
because they're going to be well, I mean, if they can somehow work together,
which I
doubt it, but
yeah, it'd be nice. But knowing how, like, these companies, like, view their, or have their mindset, like, going with these TV shows, it just isn't very
like. Well, just like supposedly Sony and Disney might be working together because to do a Spider-Man crossover for the Avengers. That's just what I've been hearing a lot on the internet. Because Spider-Man, like, two, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, excuse me, like, I guess it was like a, I thought it was a great movie, but I guess it tanked in the terms of, like, cinema.
It didn't tank. I just feel like it was very disappointing in regards to box office take. Like, it did well, but not to what they were expecting. Like, yeah. you know how, like, studios always have projections? Mm-hmm. The movie just didn't meet the projection, like, they had set for it. And as far as reviews, like, it was panned. It just did not do well. It was actually the worst-reviewed Spider-Man movie.
That's kind of hilarious. Well, I mean, that's kind of off topic, but it's just I really enjoyed The Amazing Spider-Man 2. But
it was an enjoyable movie, but I don't feel by any means it was a good movie. I feel like there was a lot of problems with it story-wise. They tried to do too much.
Yeah, they did kind of cram it in. But well, that's what I was just saying. It's just like going to what we were saying about like TNT and everything and crossover. I just hope that with all these entities that own like different kind of superheroes, I hope that they can see the bigger picture at times, and then finally just be like, well, you know what, we should work together because it's money for all of us.
Maybe at some point they will, but right now that's not the case, because I know Sony said that the only way that would happen is if Spider-Man was the lead, because they don't want him being second fiddle in the movies. That's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen.
So like I said, it's something that could be, like, I feel like down the line when they realize the potential, like, to bring in bigger box office numbers, but yeah, the sharing aspect is really what gets it at the end of the day. And then let's kind of finish this last brief, because we're going really off topic, but but not in a bad way. Is that a while ago there was images released of Haley Atwell as Agent Carter for an appearance in the second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and she was alongside. Or at least Carter was alongside Dum Dum Dugan and Jim. I forget what his last name is. In the show, but yeah. So obviously that was a flashback, and the season premiere of that show is tonight.
Like, yep.
And so maybe that image that was teased a while back will make an appearance in that episode. I don't know. I haven't checked the internet, because I know if I check hashtags.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be spoiled.
Yeah, and you don't want it to be spoiled. But, yeah. I mean, really, I think it's exciting, definitely. I mean, whether it's a flashback or I don't know how they would work her in.
Well, because Agent Carter is getting her own show.
Yeah.
And so...
Is it on the same network?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there'll be some crossovers, obviously, outside of this one little brief cameo, because the whole thing they're trying to set up, which started in Winter Soldier, is that, you know, Carter starts up S.H.I.E.L.D., and now if S.H.I.E.L.D. needing to be rebuilt, I feel like they're going to do a lot of flashbacks with Coulson trying to, dig up the history of how S.H.I.E.L.D. started to really rally the troops and rebuilding it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. I mean, well, I just want to get, like, how do you think S.H.I.E.L.D. is doing in general? Like, if you give
To be honest, I only watched the first three episodes, and I thought it was, like, okay at best, and that was it's giving us some leeway. But I'm hoping, because a lot of people felt the same way, and they said it didn't really start picking up steam until the episodes involving Winter Soldier
happened.
Yeah, so maybe the second season will be better. I feel like they might have looked back and looked at the reviews they were getting, like, how can we fix this?
Yeah, I think if they learn from their mistakes, because I was kind of wishy-washy in watching the season two, but I think if they learn from their mistakes, and then pretty much if they fix it in the Agent Carter, like, if they saw what they did in S.H.I.E.L.D. and then they kind of just try to fix those in the Agent Carter series, I think that it could, both series could kind of support each other.
Yeah.
Especially because we're not, I mean, is there a Marvel movie slotted for next year?
Yeah, there's two.
But I'm just trying to think which ones are
Avengers
they?
And Ant-Man.
The Ant-Man, I knew the Avengers, but I'm just saying that, do you really think the Avengers would they do a crossover with S.H.I.E.L.D.? Do you think that that'll affect that show?
I mean, they'll probably do, at the very least, they'll do, was it Colby Smulders, how you pronounce her last name? They'll have her come out as Maria, and maybe, like, a Samuel Jackson. But I feel like, throughout this whole season, we never saw any of the Avengers come in. The most we saw was, like, Sif.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, in no disrespect against her, but it was just, like...
She's not that.
She was a... She could be if they wanted to push her, which I feel like they will in this next third one, now that, Natalie Portman's just kind of, like, poo-poo.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, really, I think Sif, she's always been, like, I liked her more than Natalie Portman. But at the same point in time, the reason I asked her about the movies is just that, I was pretty sure that there's not, like, a Captain America or anything, like, a standalone. It's going to be the Avengers. And I just don't think that they're going to have that much crossover potential for S.H.I.E.L.D., which means that it's going to be kind of, like, having to stand alone.
Think about it this way. They usually split series, like, in half now because the ratings towards, like, Thanksgiving and beyond just suck.
Yeah.
So rather than have your show have low ratings, they just rather not air it at all.
The mid-season finale.
Yeah, the mid-season finale. I feel like they might work it out to where when it comes back for the second half of the season, because I believe Avengers comes out in May.
Yeah, it's either May or June.
But I feel like the season finale will probably, like, give us some kind of a glimpse of what to expect in Avengers 2. So I wouldn't necessarily call it a crossover, but
it's like a teaser,
a lead-in to an extent.
Oh yeah, no, definitely.
Which would help it, if you think about it, and as far as marketing goes, would help it, and with a great, like, season premiere number being like, oh, you know, like, want to see a glimpse of Avengers 2? Watch it.
Yeah, like, so, the season finale for, like, oh, this is the lead-in to Avengers 2. You're going to get a sneak peek.
Yeah.
And then that way it kind of ends it so where when they come back again, it could be the fallout of what happened with Ultron and that kind of stuff. Which, if they do that, I think that'd be really interesting.
Yeah.
But at the same point in time, I think no matter what, S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter is going to be really reliant on writing. Like, they have the actors.
Yes, they have the actors. They just need to work on the writing. One show that I'm actually not too worried about writing-wise is it's not much information is known about this, but the Bruce Timm Justice League digital-only animated series set to premiere on Machinima next year. It's set for a tentative spring 2015 date.
Really? I haven't really heard too much about it.
Well, no, they haven't. They've only recently announced it, so there's not huge details released. But really, knowing that Bruce Timm is attached is all you really need to know to have faith that it's going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, that can pretty much ride on his talent.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, Bruce Timm, for people who may not remember, is one half of the big part of the creative team for Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
So, I mean, him and Paul Dini did great work. They brought us Harley Quinn. They, you know, built their own version of Batman that today is arguably the best interpretation of the character.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I always think about it, I always go back to the animated series, and I think that's just the iconic, like, Batman for me.
Yeah. Kevin Conroy forever always be my favorite and my best, like, vision of Batman.
Yeah, exactly. Because it was just, the animated series was just, such a powerhouse. And I'm really, you know, like, you hear, like, a lot of older people, you know, and that kind of stuff. It wasn't like that in my day, but cartoons now were really not what they used to be. So if he could bring back even any kind of feeling of that, I think it'd be amazing.
Well, you know what? I don't think that cartoons have necessarily gotten worse. I just think adults have selective memory when it comes to cartoons.
Oh, wait.
Well, because we will remember all the great shows like Batman the Animated Series and, like, X-Men and all those, but really we'll forget the bad ones.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Power Rangers was the best acting I've ever seen.
I mean, I love Power Rangers, but let's be real, the acting is not the greatest.
God awful.
But, yeah, so like, when we watch cartoons today, we're just like, oh, our cartoons are better, because remember all the good ones, we remember all the bad ones.
Yeah, and
there are still great cartoons today, like, not even just, like, the more adult-related ones, like Archer and Bob's Burgers, but even, you have The Legend of Korra, which is a great, is a phenomenal show.
Yeah, the whole Airbender series was just, I think, really amazing. But, I mean, you gotta look back at it, and it's like, you know, our blocks of animated series was, like, I think it was, like, Animaniacs, then Spider-Man, and then the Batman and Superman series, you know? So you had, like, 2 full hours of just really good shows.
Well, that was back when Kids WB was, like, they're not weekdays, they're strong days.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a really good marketing gimmick. I'll give them that.
Yeah, and I just, like, that's where I look back, and I think it is kind of harder to, like, when you had, like, a block that was super strong like that, and then, of course, the advent of Pokemon, which was, I mean, it's not a really great show,
but
it was so entertaining for us back then.
You know what?
It's hard for us to be,
up until a certain point, the Pokemon cartoon was actually a great show. I want to say up until maybe the second generation Pokemon, like when they brought that in. So
I could see that
pretty much before they started changing the voice actors and before they the entire story tied together, you know, it was like, yeah. There was a couple episodes you could watch and then skip a bunch, like, you know, you have to, like, really consistently mm-hmm. watch or else you'd be lost. You'd be like, yeah. Oh, what, Ash caught a Pokemon? You got a badge? Like, you know.
He's a Charizard? What?
You know, like, it was honestly, I feel, because most cartoons, even back then, one of the main goals that they wanted to do, that every network was trying to do, was to have it to where you... Everything that happened in an episode was self-contained.
Yeah, so they didn't really have any...
So they could air it in any order they wanted.
Yeah.
You know, and so I know that X-Men the Animated Series, the first season, didn't really have that, and so that was something the networks, season two and beyond, were really like, no, like, these episodes have to be self-contained. Mm-hmm. So what they, you know, they... The best that they could do to compromise is that they would have, like, certain story arcs be shorter, so be like, oh, here's a two-part episode or a three-part episode, yeah. And then that would be it.
Yeah. There was, I could definitely see that, but you know what, actually, what was another good show in terms of consistency? I feel like, well, at least in the beginning, Batman Beyond. That was,
to be honest,
really,
that was great the entire run. I've rewatched
it. There was, like, in the first couple seasons, there was a lot of consistency, which even the return of characters that had, like, a backstory from, like, the first couple episodes. But yeah, I think the whole series was just, like, really underrated, honestly, because a lot of people, like, I'll mention Batman Beyond, they're like, oh yeah, it was okay. No. But it's like, no, dude, Terry McGinnis.
Well, I've watched the entire series 4 times through.
Uh-huh.
And it's phenomenal writing. You know, Will Friedle is a great Terry McGinnis. Obviously, Kevin Conroy coming back, and then was phenomenal as well. And then you got to see him build his own Rogues Gallery, but even see appearances from, you know, like Bruce Wayne's Rogues Gallery. I mean,
yeah.
Like, you had Ra's come out for an episode. Mm-hmm. You had Freeze come out. You even had the Joker.
Yeah, you had the Joker come back.
You know, I'm trying to think. Bane made, like, a small appearance.
Yeah, small.
Even Harley Quinn made, like, one appearance mm-hmm. as a...
It really did feel like a continuation of the other series.
Yeah, like, it didn't feel like they were just trying to bank off it. Like, they purposely wanted viewers to know, like, hey, this is definitely in the same universe. We're not just... You know, kind of, oh, hey, it's a new Batman. It's like, no, this is, like, you're going to see the foundation of this current Batman in the previous show you watched.
Yeah, exactly.
And really, the only reason it got canceled was a dumb reason. I remember reading about this, is that the crew that worked on it were commissioned to work on the Justice League cartoon, and then during a break, but I guess the timelines didn't work out the way the networks wanted to, so then Batman got put on hiatus. And then got canceled.
Oh man!
WB just got impatient and was like, "Now we're done."
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, you know, just like commenting on like what we're talking about DC in general, because I'm even thinking about Teen Titans. They just have such a good like streak with animated shows. You know?
Teen Titans got canceled for an even dumber reason.
Why?
Pretty much, there's some the contractual thing with the character of Robin. Or certain Batman characters, wherein they can't be in more than one show, and so so they had the Batman cartoon, and so they wanted to introduce Robin, they couldn't have him on both Teen Titans and the Batman, and so they felt like, because Batman's obviously a bigger franchise than Teen Titans, they were like, well, we gotta end the show.
Well, that was an uneven trade, because Teen Titans was amazing.
It was definitely better than, like, that Batman cartoon.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
So that sucks. But, so we've definitely strayed far away from the Bruce Timm Justice League show, but we did talk a fair amount about Bruce Timm, which is never a bad thing, so
never.
Not too horribly off topic. But we're going to take a musical break. Don't know what we're going to play yet, but we're going to play something fun. And then when we come back, we're actually going to talk about the Gotham pilot just aired on Fox, as well as some other quick little tidbits before calling a day. So keep it here on the MemoCast, and we'll be back in a quick couple minutes.
Something got me that, oh, Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Sticking with us through that musical break, the jams we just played are some hits from my high school days. I found some comps in my I have a keepsake box, which is like a box, a shoe box with like a bunch of things, concert stubs, old flyers, and a couple of comps that I just got more than one copy of for whatever reason. And so I decided to pick some of the songs that I enjoyed most when re-listening to those over the weekend. And we're back. Cisco and I are back here for the second half of the show. And we're going to go into a fairly decent discussion of the Gotham pilot that I just watched like 15 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Like, so he came in and I was still watching it. It was like the last 15 minutes. And I have to say, I really enjoyed it. It's not perfect, but I think it's really good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really hard for things to be perfect, but with this, it's definitely, like, I think we talked about a little bit, and an 8 out of 10 is pretty much what I would give it, and it's just really, the production value is actually better than what I thought.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
Well, no, the one thing I won't, nitpick or say anything negative about is, just the cinematography is great. It is definitely the vibe I would expect from a show about Gotham.
Yeah. It's still very dark. It's very, like, you know, focused on the characters. Mm-hmm. It's really, I mean, just everything. Even some of the locations they got, I felt was really just like, this is, like, you feel like you're in Gotham.
Yeah. One of the things I really enjoyed is that the vibe that it gave me was a very... like Law and Order, SVU type vibe.
There's a lot of noir.
when they're in this, like, the station, like, there's a lot of really cool things going on there. Like, because I feel like we never really get to see enough of the Gotham City Police Department in any incarnation.
Oh yeah, I mean, with Batman, you're always focused on, you know, the Batcave or Wayne Manor or something like that. But with this, you're kind of wondering, well, what are the police side of this, and especially with Gordon, because in every incarnation of Batman, it's always been like Gordon is like this kind of pseudo legendary cop.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, but they always display him as this kind of like,
he's a seasoned veteran who's done a lot. He's seen a lot. And so this one is, you're seeing him in the early phase of his career.
Exactly how he became that veteran. Yeah. And I think it's pretty, so far, I mean, this is like, of course, the pilot. I think that the way they display Jim Gordon is pretty cool. The only thing that I get worried about is that they're making him pretty close with Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
So are they gonna make it to where he knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman?
I mean, I don't even know if we'd ever get that far. I feel like, I don't know if, it depends if they do any time jumps or anything like that. Because I couldn't even really tell you, like, how long this show might last. They might even, like, because it's Fox. It could get canceled.
Yeah,
it could get canceled
tomorrow.
That's why I was like, don't jump too far ahead, because first, the show needs to survive that long.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just that's, like, really the only question that I had. I mean, other than that, there was really, Harvey, I mean, I think that he's, like, one of the, John Vogue, I think, right?
No, it's Donal Logue.
Oh, Donal, John Vogue, where did I get that? Who am I? John Travolta?
No, Donal Logue, I feel, was a great Bullock.
Oh, yeah.
He, down to a T. You know, he's I don't want to say douchey, but he's just got, his head is slightly up his own ass.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, he's, like, he's not a horrible guy entirely.
No, he's cunning, but he's, like, he is, like, the anti-hero in a certain way.
Yeah.
I mean,
He's got some red on his ledger, though.
Oh, yeah.
Not the best guy, but not the worst guy.
No, and, but I think that they can utilize him a lot with the story.
Yeah.
You know, and I hope to see a lot of him, because I feel like he's just underrated. I mean, in Grounded for Life, Blade, I mean, so many things. I just, he's a really underrated, like, actor, I think.
He's got a cult following.
Yeah, well, yeah. I didn't know that, but cool. I want to join that cult.
I'm all about the DL. the two people who I feel knocked it out of the park, mm-hmm. Head and shoulders above the rest, was Jada Pinkett Smith as Fish Mooney.
Mm-hmm, that's what I was going to say.
She was perfect. Like, every single scene she was in, she stole it. She killed it.
She did.
I forget the name of the actor, but the guy who played Oswald Cobblepot, you know, mm-hmm. the Penguin, he was great, too.
He was great, but that's why I was even surprised, because as I was watching their scenes together, I was more focused on Jada than I was Oswald. You know,
that's the point. He's just a little underling. This mm-hmm. is him still getting his feet, you know, his feet wet, whereas she's, like, the big boss.
Yeah.
And, I thought, to be honest, I thought, like, she was just perfect. I keep saying that, but that's just truly, like, how impressive she was in this role. And I hope that we definitely see a lot of her as the show goes on.
Yeah, well, I think that one of the ways they could start going is really focusing on the mob war between Mooney and Falcone.
Yeah.
Because it's just, like,
I mean, that's where they gotta go.
Well, I mean, well, yeah, but I mean, but then again, it's just, like, they look like they could have went a couple ways, like Penguin, for instance. Like, the last scene was of him. And then you have Selina Kyle, too, which supposedly, from what I read in the episodes, Selina Kyle is supposed to be the basis for the next episode.
Yeah. Well, so, see, that's the biggest fault the show had, is that they pretty much, here's every character that's going to be in the show all at once. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, there's Ivy, and, you know.
Oh, yeah, Ivy. I thought that was a pretty cool, different story to her. In that
I wouldn't say it's a different story. It's, I didn't remember part of the origin. I just know that she had a troubled background with, like, at the very least, like, her father in the past.
Yeah, she did have a father. And they changed the character who she was.
Yeah, they changed her name.
Yeah.
Because it was Pamela Isley.
Pamela Isley. Okay, yeah, that's what I was remembering. Now it's, like, Penn.
It was something Pepper.
Yeah, Pepper Wool. I'm sorry, Pepper Ivy. I think it was Ivy Pepper. Like, I think her actual name is that.
Yeah, so...
But one thing that I thought was cool, though, just because, I mean, there was a lot of characters, is the way that they explained Selina Kyle's connection to Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Like, she was there when his parents got shot.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, that makes more sense for, they don't even have to show it, but it kind of gives the backstory to why she's so, not obsessed with him, but just
concerned.
Yeah, concerned about him. In that kind of
sense. And I feel like they've really, like, kind of... Because there were so many characters in this pilot that she kind of got the short end of the stick because she didn't have a word of dialogue.
Yeah.
She didn't say a damn word, which is disappointing. I mean, what they gave her to work with, she did really well.
Yeah.
You know?
It was mysterious.
It was like, come on, like, she's not going to say anything?
She's all dark and,
you know,
and brooding.
Yeah. Well, that last scene of her right before the episode closes was pretty, you know, you're just like, oh. What was interesting, though, is that every character, I guess, except for maybe Ivy, is pretty much, like, a fair amount older than Bruce.
Yeah, I mean...
Which makes for an interesting take on... I mean, normally I assume that a lot of his rogues are about the same age or slightly younger, slightly older.
Well, that's the way they've always been displayed, because Ivy was always this, like, super kind of young, you know, sexy... High sex appeal. Selina Kyle, you can kind of see she looks like a little bit older, but not too. For instance, the Penguin
Oswald has always kind of been older, so that's the one that makes most sense to me. But I figured, because I feel like if I had to guess, Bruce is what, like 10, 8?
Something around there.
Between 8 and 10, mm-hmm. Whereas Selina Kyle looks like she's 15.
She's like 14 through 16 or something.
Yeah, so
like
she's got a little bit of age on him, which isn't a bad thing, you know.
Which we find out that Batman likes older women.
Yeah, I ain't hating it. So do I.
Cougars.
it's not cougar status. I feel like, because there's Puma and then there's Cougar.
Okay, so she's a Puma?
Yeah, she's a, well, she, in like 2 decades.
Yeah. Well, she's Catwoman, so it's fitting.
There you go. But, hey, if Batman ain't saying no.
Oh, no, he never says no. Well, except with, I forgot, there was that one in the movie, in the actual, like, one of the Tim Burton movies. Mm. No, excuse me, not the Tim Burton movie. The one with Two-Face and the Riddler.
Oh, that's where Nicole Kidman. Batman Forever.
Yeah. It's like, dude, you should have, you know, Bruce Wayne should have hit that. But we're going off topic on that.
You're going really off topic, dude. Bruce Wayne doesn't, no time for dating, dude, only time for justice.
That's true. Justice is his girlfriend.
Gotham is his girlfriend, we're going to be honest. He's dedicated.
And she's a salty bitch.
But she's definitely, she can be rude at times. I don't know if I would use that word, but she can definitely be rude.
She'll order the lobster.
But I don't even know what the hell that means. So like I said, as far as cons go, a little too many characters all at once, so you had too many balls being thrown up in the air. It was like a little bit of a juggling act where I was like, and I feel like what they could have done is they could have split what was going on into 2 episodes, and it would have been a bit of a stronger pilot.
I could see where one could even argue that.
I mean, not necessarily everything, but I feel like they could have put some of that into the second episode.
Well, how would you split it? Give me a picture. Paint me a picture.
I'm trying to actually right now. I feel like maybe, maybe a little bit more of the Montoya, you know, storyline.
Okay.
Could have been pushed to the second episode.
Okay.
You know, I feel like maybe Gordon visiting Bruce a little bit too much could have been also pushed to the next episode. Like, really, personally, other than, like, the one scene they share in the beginning with his parents being killed, I feel like we shouldn't have seen Bruce or even Pennyworth for the rest of the episode. And that would have worked just fine.
You know, that could have been worked in, because then you see, like, you're setting the establishment that this is not about Batman and not about Bruce. And then that way you
it's,
even...
It's about Gotham as a whole, yeah, like exactly. The show's name it implies. And then you could even start off the next episode with...
Yeah, like him visiting Bruce.
Yeah.
Which, and I could definitely see that, but I think what they were kind of scared of is they think that, oh, we're going to alienate people from Batman if we don't show Bruce.
Yeah.
And that's what people, I think, like, oh, well, where's Bruce? Where's Batman?
But I mean, like,
and a lot of people, like, would have been, like, you know, getting all weird about
that. Yeah, but the series showed the iconic moment in the first 3 minutes of how he, what sets him on the path to become Batman. I feel like just showing that alone would have been enough.
I think so. Because and that screen
because,
too,
because yeah, because that is the biggest scene in that. You know, and one of the biggest moments in that character's life.
Yeah.
You know, obviously. So it's like, I feel like we didn't need much more than that.
I think that would definitely have been a good start for the series, and then we know what Bruce, we obviously know what Bruce is going through. You know,
yeah, well, I mean, the story of Batman has been told time and time again. I mean, just, we know his parents get shot.
Yeah.
As Batman, just, you know. Well, not, obviously, there's lots of time in between that, but that's essentially the catalyst, you know, yeah. So. Just seeing that 2 minute scene, we don't really need much more of that. We know what it means.
Well, I think they were just trying so hard to establish what they were going to be showing in the show. Just because it was like, I think for them, they really think this is like make or break. Yeah. You know, because that's why they're like, oh, this is Alfred, but this isn't Alfred that you usually see. You know, he's like the commando Alfred.
Dude, no, like Alfred was way more, I don't want to say rude, but he was a little salty. He was like, get your arse down from there. Like, he was very, like, angry grandpa.
Oh, but, definitely. But in a fun way. The English grandpa that tells you it's time for bed and you don't argue.
Yeah.
Even Batman. But at the same... Well, really, I think that... I know that we were talking a little bit earlier about this is the pilot, so there is room for them to change because, obviously, people are going to respond to it, even some of the executives. Yeah. So I think that if they don't change... the feeling of it, but maybe just like you said, how involved they're going to be with a lot of the characters.
Try not to put everybody in all at once.
Yeah, exactly. But don't touch like cinematography or anything like that because I really love that and even I mean as far as acting points, there's nothing I would really.
The dialogue was a bit like at times I was like, all right, you guys, ease up a little bit.
You think it was a little bit overacted?
I don't want to say overacted, but I feel like they just gave him dialogue that was a bit like much. Like there's one part where like. You know, Bullock comes in like his first real scene, and he's like, "If a guy takes a cop's gun, you shoot him."
Oh, you know? So yeah,
and I was like, that was a little heavy-handed. It was like, yeah, you know, like, especially with given the current climate of how cops have been acting recently, I feel like that wasn't the best way. That wasn't the best foot to start Bullock.
Maybe
on.
That was like them narrating on culture.
I mean, that was just like a social commentary.
Yeah, because it kind of did make him look a little brash when he's really not. I mean, at least what they're making him, he's cunning,
he seemed
you know?
A bit more evil than he should have.
Yeah.
Is what I'm getting at, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. No,
because he's
that.
One of the leads, and you don't want people to hate him that much from the get-go.
Unless they're going to try to do, like, a super spin on him. You know, but
I mean, like, that's a build-up that you shouldn't have, like, in his first introduction.
Yeah.
Oh, this, like, it's like, because if that's where you're starting from, imagine how much more you have to build from that.
Yeah, I know, that's true. They're kind of swinging for the fences. They were like, we're going to make him super... super crazy right now, and I think
like
and
uber tyrannical cop.
Yeah, exactly. When he's really probably going to be not that.
Like I said, my biggest exposure to Bullock has been Batman the Animated Series, and going off there, you know, he's very brash and he's a bit of an asshole, but he's still not a bad cop.
Yeah, no, I mean, in the end, he's like a little selfish. He'll you know take a little off the top, but he won't straight up break. You know, laws or hurt people.
Well, he'll hurt people, but he won't kill anybody.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know.
At least, like I said, as far as the cartoon goes, no one really died for the most part. other than parents.
Yeah, exactly. Parents are not safe in any superhero, anything.
Especially in Gotham. Nobody's parents are safe.
Oh, yeah. No,
in fact,
exactly.
if you want to live in Gotham, don't have kids.
Oh, yeah,
that's the best way to stay alive.
this is like Gotham's like underlying thing is just abstinence.
It's abstinence only education.
Yeah.
Not so much because they want to keep the population down, so they want to keep it up.
Yeah, exactly. They do not want you to be killed.
Yeah, they do not. Yeah, so it's really interesting. We'll have to see where it goes starting next week. But yeah, I think we talked a fair amount about it. So it's on Hulu for those of you who have missed it. So you can check that out on your own time.
Yeah,
obviously.
Definitely watch it just to get your own opinion about it. And
I would at least say it's worth watching.
Oh yeah,
from episode 2 and on, you can decide if you want to keep up with it. So we'll go over some quick little things that kind of close out the show, and then I think we'll be done. So for those who may have missed this, Gwar recently introduced a brand new member of their band. She is a female co-vocalist by the name of Volvatron.
And, I love her name.
Yeah, dude, she... Well, I mean, everyone in Gwar kind of has, like, those, you know... I'm trying to think of all the members of Gwar, like Odorous Arungus and like other like really just like vulgar names like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think for a chick she totally fits being in there. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
She's got the right vibe. I mean her tits shoot blood. Not her real ones, but like the prosthetic ones like, that she wears.
Let's do that, because all of a sudden then people are gonna be like, wait a minute, can mine do that? No.
Well but I mean like a Gwar show wouldn't be a Gwar show about like fake vomit.
Oh, yeah,
and blood.
Not with like some like over the top disgusting kind of stuff.
Oh,
that's what makes them.
That's what I love about them. I've only ever seen them once, but that one time, like the shirt I wore was completely ruined.
Oh, that's amazing.
And that's how that's how a Gwar show has to be.
That's really cool, though. I mean, I haven't seen them, and but I really want to.
They're a band you have to see at least once, but to be honest, if you can afford it and can make it work, they're a band you would want to see multiple times. Yeah. But like, if I had to make like a top 10 bands that people have to see, they'd easily be like on that list, no questions asked.
Definitely. And this is the first time they've had a girl, right?
They've had as like an actual member of the band, they've had like a backup dancer slash like actor, so to speak, because when you watch Gwar, it is the metal equivalent of like a big stage show. They have like giant props, and like they feed people to dinosaurs and shit like that. Like it gets
that's
nuts.
Awesome, though.
Like I remember
half show, half circus.
It is, you know, it's like, for a band of their level, they do stuff that, like, maybe, like, a Katy Perry or Kanye West would do, like, in their big stadium shows, but, like, on a small stage.
That's really cool. So. And that's I've always, like, admired them for that, too. So I think taking this step to make her, like, an actual part of the band and a singer is, like, exciting things.
And so, I believe she's sharing vocal duties with Blothar. And so that should be pretty entertaining. Hopefully they announce West Coast dates at some point. Yeah. To be honest, I feel like
are they mostly an East Coast band?
They're from Virginia.
Virginia.
Or at least they're based, yeah.
What the hell is going on in Virginia that they produce Gwar?
I don't know. I mean, you have to understand, Gwar has been around for close to 30 years, if not more than that.
Oh, yeah, they're getting older, yeah.
You know, they've been around for a really long time. And that just losing Odorous this year was a huge blow, but I'm glad to see that they were able to like plow through and really stay, you know, relevant, you know.
Definitely.
But yeah, like they play the Glass House fairly frequently. I feel like that's just the venue they love coming back to.
Oh yeah.
I remember one time I was on tour and we went. It was like our first day of the first actual show of tour, and it was at the Firebird Theater in. Was it Lincoln, Nebraska? Wherever the University of Nebraska is.
Okay.
This is where the show was. And so Gwar was there the night before. And so when we were loading in the back alley, there was still puddles of fake blood just there left over.
That's
and
awesome.
And when we were asking, like, what's up with all this stuff? Because we didn't know at the time Gwar played. They're like, oh, yeah, Gwar played, and we were still cleaning up. And I was like...
Yep, that's a Gwar show.
it gets messy. Like, it is definitely excitement. So yeah, we'll see how they go with incorporating her into like new music. I'm assuming like now if the big lineup change, they'll probably end up, you know, putting out a new CD sometime.
Yeah,
that would be
the next step on it. So
yeah, they've been doing a lot too, because they recently put out their own vape juice, and they put out their own beer.
What's the beer called?
I forget what it's called. But I think they debuted it at the Gwarbecue either this year or last year.
That's awesome.
Every year they have like a huge annual event. Like, and a lot of bands are doing this, but they've been doing it for forever. Where it's like it's a huge festival where they invite a lot of bands that they enjoy to come. And it's called the Gwarbecue because it's a huge celebration with lots of food and eating, and everyone's partying. Every band's doing it, or every major band's doing it. Or they're doing it like a cruise. Like Paramore has the Parahoy tour.
Oh yeah,
Metallica just did their festival. Slipknot has a festival now.
Yeah,
like everybody's like doing their own thing.
Yeah, well, because I mean, really, you know, festivals now have been turned into like we don't even have Ozfest anymore, you know, and that kind of stuff. And I mean, Coachella is like,
well, Coachella is more of a festival you go to say you were at.
Yeah, exactly. You don't really go to enjoy, I mean, like the music anymore. I don't feel that anyway. I mean,
I mean
their lineups are good and bad, but
Wait, the thing with Coachella is I see more people talking about, like, the after parties or the pre-parties, like, or, like, you know, like...
Not, well, like, the band, but, like, oh, I went here after this, you know?
And it's just, yeah, like, it's like, who'd you see? Oh, I went to the dance tents. That's cool, I guess.
Like, oh, yeah, that's cool. I mean, you could go to dance tents.
There's so many, like, other... But it is what it is.
I'd rather go to the barbecue, though.
I mean, I went, and you know what band I feel like first started this, or at least had the most success of it, is Insane Clown Posse.
What the... Oh, dude, the Juggalos?
The Gathering of the Juggalos. It happens every... Dude, they... I'll show you part of it once we're done, but every year they put out an infomercial advertising the Gathering.
Really?
Yeah.
Dude, you know what? I saw, actually, on Facebook, there was this... It was like a documentary, kind of, about the Juggalo Fest, or the Gathering of the Juggalos. Yeah. But it was narrated by Morgan Freeman's, like,
What they did was they took his dialogue from March of Penguins.
Yes, March of Penguins, and then put it there, dude. Oh, it made me bust up laughing. Yeah. But, hey, you know, people who love ICP are, like, hardcore.
Well, you know what's funny is that they get a lot of stuff going on. They have helicopter rides. They have they have food vendors. They have a lot of artists come. They have wrestling. They have comedy. Tom Green performs every other year.
That's actually pretty well put together.
Yeah, and Andrew WK has come out before. What? Yeah, they've had like Ice Cube and like Method and Red. Like,
dude, I'm gonna have to.
Like,
go.
I don't even like Insane Clown Posse, neither, but I would go.
Yeah,
in fact, there was an episode of Workaholics where they go to the Gathering of the Juggalos.
Dude, that's gonna be insane. Yeah,
insane.
It's one of those things. There we go. I'm feeding into it. But I definitely got to go just to, like, experience it once. It's one of those things.
Yeah, it's always somewhere in the Midwest because that's where they're from.
Yeah, that's where they're from. Yeah.
And it's just interesting to see that band has been doing that for, like, for years. And, yeah. It's interesting because, like, the wrestling part is what I'm always wanting to check out because they have their own, like, wrestling federation.
I remember playing the video game N64.
Yeah, this is the Juggalo Wrestling
Federation.
It was
the Backyard
federation.
Wrestling, yeah. And it was a fun game.
they're interesting guys, you know? Yeah. They definitely know how to work the audience, and they definitely do have an empire, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, the Juggalo Empire.
Well, they have, I forget what the name of they have their own record label, and I forget what it's called. Yeah, dude.
Wow, I see, that's just, it's crazy to think that, like, I mean, you look at them, and they seem so, like, crass on the outside, but they're probably, like, really successful businessmen.
Yeah, their merchandise sells really well. It's fairly pricey. And they just, because they're arguably one of the biggest independent acts in the market today.
Really?
Like, they do really, really well.
Wow. Money and juggling. Who would have thought?
Well, no, like, they just have that cult following. That, dude, like, I work at Hot Topic. And so a lot of times I'll see people come in with, like, their Hatchet Man tattoos or, like, their necklace.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, that's how I know they're a juggalo, you know? Yeah. And they even have, like, their own group of bands, like Twisted.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And who's that other, who's this rapper? He, he's, like, the horrorcore rapper. And he's
not Necro.
No. He has, like, a juggalo following, even though he's, not necessarily, like, a juggalo rapper. He has a huge sponsor. I can't remember what his name is. But, dude, like, there's even a lot of crossover with the Cottonmouth Kings.
Oh, yeah.
Every time
I was going to say, I was like, I wonder if, like, Metal... I don't think Metal Militia is a band. I don't really know.
No, Metal Militia is, like, that whole...
Kind of
seemed
like the whole scene.
Like, the dirt bike, like,
oh,
stuff.
Okay. Well, I kind of figured that Cottonmouth Kings would be part of it. Because a lot of... When I listen to them, I kind of, like, oh, this sounds like... Kind of like ICP.
It's all about weed.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really what the common overlap is. Is just weed.
Weed. Smoke. Weed.
But, yeah. So, we got on to the topic of juggalos.
Yeah, exactly.
What are you going
to
do?
Guar to juggalos to weed.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure the average guar smoker, or guar, the guar fan is a smoker of sorts.
Oh, probably.
Yeah. But, you know, I think we've covered a fair amount of stuff in this episode, so I think it's...
Oh, yeah, probably more than enough.
More than anticipated.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we didn't even cover the last topic, which I guess we can just shoehorn in really quickly,
okay.
Is that
let's do this.
And the Deadpool movie is slated to come out in 2015 at some point.
Oh, yeah, there was someone bemoaning it on Facebook today because it was going to be PG-13 rating,
which
I think is going to be fun.
You know what, though? I feel like for that character... It has to be R. Like,
really?
Well, it's just...
Because of his dialogue and stuff?
Not even just the dialogue, but of how, like, how much killing and just maiming and et cetera goes on in that character's book.
The funny thing is...
There's a lot of casual violence.
Well, that's very true, but the funny thing is that I was looking at, like, with, like, a lot of ratings, and violence really isn't what makes movies rated R unless you're showing, like, headless bodies and stuff, which by all means they should be. But I'm just saying that as long as they don't really have sex in it, and they would also have to cut down his swearing, you know, his dialogue and that kind of stuff. But I mean, as long as they don't really have sex and that much swearing,
I mean, they could do about the sex very easily. But dude, the violence is part of what makes Deadpool Deadpool. You know, it's just like you couldn't do Kick-Ass as a PG-13 movie.
Yeah,
and for the or even the sequel, or for that same regard, it's how like the Aliens versus Predator series.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, I mean, both movies kind of sucked. The second one was better because of how much like
they added in like the actual like. To me, it was much more like this is what war between those two would look like.
Yeah, so, you know, it is what it is, and then so we'll see how that goes. Maybe because I think it's just tentatively, it's not set in stone that it is PG-13.
Until we see anything about it, then we're not going to know. But I do think I agree with you. Like, I would want it to be rated R, but I'm just saying that I don't think that if it was PG-13, it would be like, oh, it's horrible now.
Yeah, no, PG-13 movies just tend to do better.
Yeah,
box office wise,
because you don't have to have your mom come in.
Yeah, and the other thing was just that the Fantastic Four movie got moved from June to August. Partially because I think it was the Assassin's Creed movie that was slated for that August date.
I didn't even know.
Yeah. Well, I think either got pushed back or is, like, on hiatus or... It's just some weird fiasco. Now, if that date opened, I guess Fox just thought it might be better to have Fantastic Four open up in August as opposed to June.
A lot of people don't want to compete. And, I mean, with Assassin's Creed, it's always, like...
Well,
they have a hardcore fan base,
I think
too.
What it is that they know that Avengers is out in May. Yeah. So they don't want to be too close towards, like, the Avengers streak. Because that movie is going to do really well for a couple of weeks. I don't think they want Fantastic Four to hurt because people are still watching Avengers.
Yeah, exactly. And they, you know, it has one team and then another super team and that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's just people might feel... Or, like, the production people might feel like it's too close in similarity. But just a quick question on it. Have they said who's casted in it?
Yeah, for Fantastic Four?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, they've already finished filming.
Really? Yeah. Dude, that's so weird.
They did it under the radar.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, I didn't feel like I heard anything about it.
You've not been paying attention to the internet.
I guess why.
Yeah, because, the biggest one was that they casted Michael B. Jordan as, what's it called? As a Human Torch. So there was a huge internet, like, just... going shitting its pants because we had a black Human Torch.
Yeah, like when Ben Affleck was Batman.
It was more so when you saw Donald Glover trying to be Spider-Man and everyone was like, we can't have a black Spider-Man, and all their arguments were really dumb.
Yeah, you know, dude, there's nothing wrong with making a character black. I mean, what's the point? It's like, oh, it's going to be so different, you know?
It's just
he's not a human.
It's not even just that. It's just partially if you look at how this country has had relations with the black community at large. It's just, I feel like there's still like some racial tensions, especially like there is like casual racism where I feel like people can't envision like a black actor portraying like a role like that.
Yeah, which is like of a white hero and that kind of stuff.
Well, one of the best things that Donald Glover said is he was in an interview a while back, a couple of years ago, about how like he got a lot of emails saying, or like tweets, whatever, like F you, N word, you know, fuck you, like don't make Peter Parker black, that's dumb.
How far we've come.
And then one guy sent him an email and he is trying to be very nice, and he just pretty much, his argument was like, you know, like there are no, like, I can't imagine Peter Parker being black because there are no black kids like that. And then so Donald was like, you know, like, that doesn't make any sense to me. You're telling me that there's no black kids that live in New York that love photography, that live with their aunt,
that love science. Yeah.
Like, how can you not envision that? That's, you know, like, that's just...
Having aunts loving science and photography are all white. We didn't know that, but...
It's just how people, like... I don't want to be all like, oh, white man's the devil. I don't want to be on that route.
No, but it's how they envision.
But it's how they view minorities. Like, they very much see us as an other. And I say us because we're both Mexican.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like they can't identify or with us being similar to them in that regard.
Yeah,
it's
they
like,
feel like no matter what, there's always, even for people who aren't inherently like bluntly racist.
It's like a casual thing.
Like, yeah, it's like you said, casual racism. It's like I feel like. I'm not going to say all white people, because obviously I'm half white too and that kind of stuff, but I feel like there is a lot of like entitlement that goes under the radar and they don't even realize it. Like, you know, for instance, like Peter Parker, why can't Peter Parker be black? Just because he loves science and loves photography, like you said.
I was like,
you know,
dude, like what look at Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah, for anyone that knows, I mean, like our friend Jason Howard, I mean, like he's
He could be a Black Spider-Man.
He could be a Black Spider-Man for all we know, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
That'd be kind of funny.
That would actually be hilarious. He'd be like a Red Lantern Spider-Man, though.
he'd be a pissed off Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be like a weird, like, thing to see. But we're going to end on Jason Howard as Spider-Man. Yep. And
just in case you guys didn't know, sorry.
Thanks for listening, you guys. And I'll see you next week with the post Long Beach Comic Con coverage, and we'll see who's joining me in the hot seat next week. So until then, take care and bye, guys. It's time to say goodbye.